From KQED and the California Report, this is Capitol Notes, a weekly roundup of California politics from the state capitol in Sacramento.
Support for this public radio podcast comes from Vanguard, offering investments designed to help individuals and institutions reach their long-term financial goals. 1-888-VANGUARD.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Capitol Notes podcast for this week ending the 14th of December. I'm John Myers from KQED, sitting here in our state capitol studios with a two-man show today. Anthony York missing in action. You're not Anthony York.
No, I'm not. It's Jordan Rao with the Los Angeles Times. I wanted to be Anthony York, and I tried to get one of those John Travolta, Nicolas Cage face transplant things, but it didn't quite work out.
That was a self-introduction. I appreciate you doing that. Yes, Jordan is here with me to talk about the week's news, or actually we're probably just going to focus on the strange mashing together of two subjects that Jordan covers a lot, and I've been forced to watch this week as well, which is healthcare and the state budget. And really, literally, mashed together this week in a lot of ways. Is that a fair assumption, Mr. Rao?
Yeah, I think that healthcare has been the large semi driving down the highway at an increasing velocity, and now the state budget is the gigantic lumber truck that apparently has blown out all of its tires, and it looks like we're going to have a little mashup.
Yeah, if you've
been watching, it's a Thule fog, you know.
I was going to say that, or you've been watching too many action movies or something. That was a very good description. Well, let's talk about the healthcare issue first, because that has been on the on the minds of people now for several months. So this week, as the week ended, we didn't have a deal. We kind of had a framework of a deal, was the way it was said to me on Thursday. We had a somewhat, almost, kind of, sort of, maybe close to a deal. I mean, really every word but, right?
Oh, totally. I think that I once didn't have sex with a woman, but I did have framework for having sex with the woman. So it was... really the same thing.
It's a good thing
there's no difference.
A podcast.
I know.
So, I mean, how close do you think they are? I mean, let's talk about where we have found common ground. We seem to have found common ground or close to common ground on some of the big sticking points.
I think at this point you have to look at the process. The governor and Nunez are very close, and they've been driven closer because SEIU, which has really been holding out for some strong protections on affordability, that's obviously
And let's back up. SEIU is a labor union, Service Employees International.
Right, it's one of the most influential labor unions, as well as the one that represents most healthcare workers, so they have multiple interests in this subject. They had really been holding out on the issue of affordability and didn't want to sign off on anything unless it was very clear that the governor wasn't going to force people to buy insurance and that they couldn't afford it. But now they are really pressing for national and political reasons we can get into later if we want, or if everyone's still awake. They are now pressing for a deal to be resolved quickly. So it looks like there's a good chance that the governor and Nunez will be able to put enough $14 billion numbers together to have a plan that they both like and put it up for vote in the assembly on Monday.
But to do that, they clearly have to reach a compromise, which we hear is close, on exactly where we are on employer fees. So they're
right.
Pretty close on the employer fee issue as it was, right. In terms of how much employers have to contribute to their workers' health care or the pool or all the things we've talked about over the last few months. And they've also got to deal with one of the funding issues, whether the governor will endorse some kind of tobacco tax hike to help pay for this instead of his idea of privatizing the lottery, which we hear there's some possibility of that as well. I mean, I'm taking pieces out of the pie here, but these are things that have been talked about a lot in the press and in the Capitol for weeks.
Yeah, it's pretty clear that there is a tobacco piece, probably about $1.50 a pack, but they've been side negotiating with the tobacco industry, which has been saying, well, we're willing to sign off if also give us full indemnity from any future lawsuits, and Joe Camel is elected treasurer of the state of California, et cetera, et cetera. So that's definitely a piece. The employer fee is at least at 6%, which is closer to what the Democrats wanted than the governor, and may even go up a eensy bit. It's, basically like at this point, all this stuff looks like the income tax form where you need an accountant to figure it out.
Let's talk about the employer contribution. Mm-hmm. I mean, can the governor get the business community on board then? I mean, the business community has been so lukewarm to this thing all year long. And We said the last time you were here at the podcast, we talked about the whole notion of how far could you stretch both sides to the middle. I mean, can they really stretch that far? I don't know what you've heard from the business community.
He's never going to get the business community on board. They really haven't been playing. What he's trying to do is divide and conquer and get enough of the small businesses to be mollified by starting the employer fee at around 1%.
Sliding scale.
Exactly, the sliding scale, and then having it go on up, and once you get to 6% for larger companies, well, larger companies are much more likely to already provide health care, and let's not forget, of course, that the real cost for providing a plan that doesn't suck is around 13% of a payroll. So already this isn't as big a contribution as it might sound. So he's hoping for that, but the chamber, if he's lucky, will be neutral on this, Chamber of Commerce. And, there are just no business groups there are a couple of business groups that are enthusiastic, but they're ones that already provide insurance.
So going back to the process issue of healthcare, since the process often drives things, we found at the end of the week, another big discussion with the governor and Speaker Nunez and then Senator Parada coming in. And then on Thursday, when that meeting broke up, we found another chapter of that dynamic of the Nunez versus Parada interpretation of what's going on. Speaker Nunez saying, we're close. I think we've got a deal. I'm going to run it up for a vote on Monday. Senator Parada coming out and saying, I don't see how we can do this in the face of a $14 billion budget deficit. We can't afford this right now, et cetera, something to that effect. Nunez's people thinking Parada had thrown a wet blanket on things. Parada's people thinking Nunez was somehow trying to jam them into making some kind of decisions here. I mean, again, it was a bit of a Democratic leadership scuffle, for lack of a better term.
Yeah, I think there are two things that are going on. One is obviously that this has been a Parada-Nunez deal, and the Senate has been a lot less enthusiastic about it. A lot of them would rather not deal with a lot of the tough issues, but also its composition is different. The Democratic Senate is actually probably more conservative, this is the Democratic members, than the Assembly Democrats.
Right.
And there's even been talk that there might not be the votes, if this thing passes the Assembly and gets over to the Senate, to get it out of committee. So the caucus is in a different place. Parada has some real reservations anyway. He may be doing a very clever gambit with the bringing the budget into it, which is he's basically holding the governor's plan ransom and saying, you know what, if you want your plan, well, then you have to figure out a way not to cut the crap out of all the social service programs that are existing. And so what he did was he basically said, I'm not going to take this thing up until we see what you want to do with the state budget. And the governor clearly had been indicating he went to a Latino event down at, I think, the California Endowment in L.A. a couple weeks ago and gave a big speech to say how this plan was going to end up helping people down the line. And they chose that event, the governor's office, because, Latinos are the largest group currently without health care. So he's basically but he also hinted that, well, because of the budget problems, they may, for the next couple of years, they may cut back on healthy families and some of the other programs that right now serve people. So you'd have this odd deal where it's basically, well, I'm going to, eat your hamburger today and I'm going to pay you back for it, on Thursday or whatever Wimpy used to do. But it's different from Wimpy.
Well, I was going to, the Wimpy analogy, and then I was going to use my favorite Star Trek analogy. You ever watch Star Trek?
Ever? Well, which one? Only the original.
The original.
Yeah,
please. The other one. Why would you watch the others? But my point is my favorite analogy sometimes about negotiations at the state capitol is it's like three-dimensional chess. What Spock used to play.
Okay.
Everything is somehow related to something else. Things are going on multiple layers, budget, health care, underlying political pressures back and forth. And this is really seems to be one of those examples you were talking about with the budget pressures.
In New York, they used to call it linkage. Everything is linked and things are, it really is. It's basically Thelma and Louise. You just get, everyone gets handcuffed together and you all go over the cliff
together.
But I like that analogy. I was thinking more that it was like Star Trek where you get beamed up in the transporter and then they lose power and they lose you in space and you're just gone and then you come back like this weird mix of a cat and a dog. And
it just goes to show that life does in fact mirror Star Trek.
Yes.
Not that I'm a Trekkie.
Never.
Of course, I sounded like I am one now. Let's talk about the budget part of this though for a moment because now let's move to that other dimension because we're getting a whole lot of a whole lot of chatter at the state capitol. I mean, it's this is the annual time you get it anyway, because we get the, you know, the governor's people get their last best fiscal data at the end of the year about what's going on, everything from property taxes to, you know, other kinds of taxes and revenues and things. And then they sit down and they present the options to the governor. The governor signs off on things. The governor releases a budget on January 10th. That happens every year. What really, you know, we're seeing this year, as we know, is we've got a whole lot of red ink in this budget. We're now hearing the governor's people telling people $14 billion, telling different interest groups that. You reported that this week, I believe.
The governor himself was telling some of the interest groups.
Right,
$14 billion.
And then this notion of the theoretical across-the-board cut, which I still want to know exactly what that means, but no one knows what that means yet and how you actually resolve this. I mean, it's what's your sense from the interest groups you talk to? How are they reacting to it? I mean, are they somber? Do they realize it? I mean, are they fighting it?
I think that most people haven't really figured out what their stance is going to be. And as we all know, who spend our quality springs and summers sitting outside of locked doors,
waiting for negotiations to conclude.
As Russell Baker used to say, sitting outside of doors waiting for people to come out and lie to you. So he just quit reporting and became a columnist. But that's not an option for everybody. I think more so than previous years, this year's budget that the governor releases is probably just going to be a punt, you know, because he doesn't know how to solve it. His people have admitted as much. And so they're going to, you know, put out something that's balanced on paper because they have to. And then they're going to, you know, wait around and jostle and see what happens around May and June and probably July and August.
That's an awful lot of red ink, though, to just punt on, isn't it? I mean, it would seem this is the most substantive hole he has found himself in since he took office and took over Gray Davis's hole.
Right. Well, he's already about a month ago, he already ordered all of his departments to start making 10% cuts. But, of course, that's easier in some places than others. I mean,
right. You
can't just willy-nilly cut education because of Prop 98.
Or corrections, and you're not going to just slice down the overcrowded budget of prison system as it is.
Exactly. So, you know, we haven't seen exactly what the results of that is. But he is trying to trim whatever spending that he can, which is prudent or purient. I don't think it's purient. I think it's prudent.
I think it's prudent.
Yeah.
Okay. Let me get the dictionary. I'm pretty sure you're off on that.
No, it's definitely prudent. But except for if he cut some of the sex programs that the state runs, but then it would be purient. But we don't need to talk about those today.
That is
morning.
Another podcast, as we like to say on this
I
podcast.
Know. Well, you know, the FCC doesn't regulate you.
But you see what happens, folks, when you only read a print reporter's work and you don't get to hear these newspaper reporters? This is Jordan Rao. This is okay. Anyway,
it's Anthony York.
But let's.
So anyway,
you're filling in well for Anthony's smart aleckness. But go ahead.
What was the point?
We were just largely talking about whether you come up with just a get out of town alive budget this year, whether you have to substantively do something, and I think you're right. I mean, the odds are you do a get out of town alive budget, but there are so many competing forces in this, and so many of those easy options have been knocked off the table by people like Arnold Schwarzenegger, who has locked off local government money, locked off transportation money.
Borrowed to the hilt.
Borrowed to the hilt, exactly. Really, I think, would have a PR problem if he went and tried to cash in the rest of the deficit bonds that he could cash in to try to float more of this problem. It's hard to know where to go. I was KQED's daily talk show program Forum. I was on this morning, Friday morning, as we're talking, with a couple of different folks, and Steve Levy from the Center for the Continuing Study of the California Economy. Man, that's a long name. Started theorizing about where you could find $14 billion if you really were going to do it in some kind of equitable way, and came up with a number of like $5 billion out of education. A $5 billion hit to education would land like a, you know, like a something that no one could believe. I mean, that would just be huge. So, I mean, in that sense, maybe you could be right. The odds are that you do just do a paper over, get out of town alive kind of thing.
Yeah, I mean, the other problem is that it's such a large amount that you cannot make $14 billion worth of cuts that the Democrats will go on along with, and you can't make $14 billion worth of tax raises and increases that the Republicans will go along with. And let's remember that last year we had a the budget went 2 months past deadline, and that was a dispute over $700 million.
Right.
So right. 700 million, 14, whatever, by that theory.
Do the math, it'll be
do the math, 2013, exactly,
2013.
When this budget will be finished. Yeah. So I don't think anyone has got a good plan to get out of it. And I think that, you know, I mean, the governor's obviously not going to propose a tax increase. But at this point, you know, who knows? And he's always proved himself, above all, pragmatic over a realist. So, you know, I don't know. No one knows.
So, but trying to now tie the three-dimensional chess back together, there is this discussion. I know. But there's this discussion about how the budget problem is or is not related to health care. You know, and there's some who say you solve the state's health care problems, you take pressure off the state budget and state spending. There are others that say if you start doing these across-the-board cuts and you start cutting money out of health and human services programs, it directly impacts what you're trying to fix in health care. You're kind of screwing up one end of it while you're trying to fix the other end. I mean, it's hard to know exactly where the spin is there right now, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, the governor's office has been trying to make the case that the health care plan would alleviate the state budget down the road. I think that that's a pretty difficult case to make. It helps out in some ways. It leverages a couple of billion dollars more in federal funds, you know, and also, you know, allegedly will reduce the amount of uninsured people showing up at hospitals and, you know, needing care. But it's very precariously balanced. And the moment that healthcare costs go up, which they always do, it goes out of balance and no one knows by how much. And if that happens, well, it's going to cost more. Who's going to pay for it? Are you going to increase your employer fee above your 6 or 6.5%? Are you going to suddenly have your revenue neutral portion of the state budget, basically using the existing funds that right now fund social service and health programs? Are you going to suddenly need more money from the state budget? Are you going to make individuals pick up a larger share of premiums? So, you know, I think that that's a dangerous case to make. But you do have, and this was one of Prada's main points, is how do you go to the ballot next November, and which is what they have to do with this health care plan, and sell it.
For the financing.
Sell it and say we're going to be insuring everyone at the same time that they spent the whole year basically fighting and kicking people off of existing programs. They're very incongruous messages.
I was going to say it's a mixed message of some sort.
Yeah. And you know, and people are going to probably be – it's going to really feed into the no side of that initiative, which already has some pretty heavy likely hitters.
Well, and there was some discussion this week, too, that Speaker Nunez was talking about how some tobacco interests have been calling each one of the members in his caucus and pushing them very hard about tobacco issues, even though you were talking about there's some side deals going on, you know, pushing them, you know, trying to, you know, kind of put the pressure on them a little bit, too. I mean, it's – so under the, all of that under the umbrella of saying, you know, all of this is going to be really ratcheted up, really intense, really, really difficult to pull forward. You can say you have a deal at the Capitol on how health care would work under a reform system that has nothing to do, unfortunately, with a political campaign over how you pay for it.
Right. Well, this whole thing has become such a weird sort of hydra-headed – no, that's not the right metaphor. I forget. What's the thing?
Star Trek metaphor?
Star Trek metaphor?
Which character? Never mind. Go ahead.
I'm trying to think. It would probably be, you know, the guy, the ambassador dude with the fake little antenna that stuck out of his – anyway – the whole thing has been bizarre because they can't pass it through the legislature because the Republicans won't vote for it. They're passing, even assuming that they do pass this bill, they're passing a bill that doesn't take effect until a ballot measure takes effect. And they could really just put the whole thing in the ballot measure, which they have to go – the governor of the state and the Democratic leaders are going to have to go, you know, like any whack job around the state with a bunch of petitions to collect enough to put it on the – ballot because you can't just because they can't get the support from the Republicans in the legislature to put it on the ballot. So you could really put the whole thing on the ballot, but they don't want to do that. They want to be able to show something substantial and concrete that was done through legislation. Coincidentally, that would be a nice thing to have come February 5th when voters consider whether to change the term limits law. And so you've got a whole year where this thing is going to be sort of sitting out there with people taking pot shots at it.
Do you, you know, just I guess the only other thing I can think of on this is that this last rush of negotiations and back and forth and sources talking about, you know, issue X is on the table now or issue Y has been resolved comes after this really long quiet period, you know, where the talks were still going on. But it was, you know, it was gloomy. It was very gloomy for the prospects of a deal. You know, I don't think a lot of people have been terribly optimistic that healthcare was going to get resolved by December 31st. And now we feel like we've, you know, it feels like one of these classic 11th hour, we've got to get it to say we've got it done, you know, to be able to declare victory, right? In
right.
some ways, I mean, that's really
this
what
was going to be
like.
The year of healthcare. Today is the 14th. So if it's going to be the year, you're running out unless
right.
everyone's going to be, you know, I don't think the members of the legislature are going to be too happy to be pulled out on Christmas Day and drag their stockings back up here to vote on something.
In which case, I mean, it's just, you know, so if you get it through in some by some miracle, you get it through with all the hurdles we've talked about, you declare victory and you still have a million things left to resolve on this issue.
Yeah.
And a million things that could derail it instantly. I guess that's really the bottom line there.
Yeah, I think that this is sort of like this is not a Star Trek metaphor. I'm sorry.
Well, we're
this
not using them today if I'm not Star
they're
Trek
gone?
Metaphors.
Good.
Go ahead.
It's sort of like those exercycles at the gym where you program the thing in, and so instead of going regularly the same speed, it gets harder and harder at each part of your workout till at the end when you're really, really tired, it's the hardest, and then, you know, you basically turn it off.
Or it's like where Captain Kirk sent Khan off to another planet.
Khan!
And then Khan came back in Star Trek II.
That's true, but that was after he was in Ricardo Montalbán was on Fantasy Island for
several
years.
I'm not sure who Captain Kirk is here in this healthcare budget thing.
I don't know.
Khan is, but we'll figure that out later. I can't believe I'm sitting here acting like I'm a Trekkie. I'm not really a Trekkie.
Well, then how do you explain that outfit that you're wearing with the tricorder attached to the side and the insignia and the ears?
Yeah, well,
Tamara Keith says that that's what you wear every single day.
Well, the ears I was born with.
Oh.
Okay, I think that is enough for this random podcast. As they would say in future worlds, live long and prosper, Jordan Rao.
May the force be with you.
Jordan Rao from the Los Angeles Times with me today. I'm John Myers from KQED and the California Report. And yes, it has been disjointed, but we'll be back next week with more.
Support for this public radio podcast comes from Acura, featuring the TL Type S with a 286-horsepower V6 and real-time traffic alerts. Learn more at Acura.com.